This show is a proud member of the Pride 48 Podcasting Network. Check out other great podcasts at pride48.com/shows.
Welcome to the North and South of Things podcast, a show dedicated to discussion of topics important to the LGBT community and the community at large. Here are your hosts, Mark and George. Hey kids, welcome back to the North and South of Things. This is George in Atlanta, and with me all the way from St. Paul, Minnesota, it's Mark. How are you, Mark?
I am fantastic, George. It's kind of a warm, cloudy summer day here. It's going to be 84 with chances of rain later on.
I think we have a very similar forecast. I'm hoping we don't have much rain because I'm feeling some pool time this afternoon.
Oh, that's right. I've been noticing some of the photos that you've been posting on social media, and I'm kind of jealous because I don't even have a kiddie pool in the backyard.
I have to tell you, I've been here over 5 years now, right? 5 years and a couple months. And mm-hmm. I've probably been to the pool more in the last 3 weeks than I've been in the last 5 years combined, which is just crazy. I'm spending the same amount of HOA money as everybody else. I should be taking advantage of these amenities in the building. And I'm trying to do more of that. Be less hermit-like.
That's a good plan. It's good to get out of our houses and our condos from time to time
and meet some of the people in the building and learn who your neighbors are. I've gone to a few of the socials. We had a pool party, our annual pool party a couple weeks ago. That was a drunken festive occasion, but it was fun. To get to see people in a slightly different light. But I'm enjoying it, and I also refuse to go on this cruise in September, looking like the whitest person on the cruise. So,
I think that's an admirable goal.
Yeah, exactly. So, Mark, today we are not going to talk about a singular topic. We had such fun with the episode where we used the Topic Suggest app that we decided we were going to do it again, didn't we?
That's right, because why not?
Because why not? Thank you. So we are using this app called Topic Suggest, and as we said before, you can choose some of the options. You can choose is who you're talking to, right? I'm talking to anyone. I'm talking to a girlfriend. I'm talking to a spouse or husband, or I'm talking to a friend. Why does it say girlfriend but not boyfriend? This thing is homophobic. I cannot believe we're using a homophobic app. Unless it's girlfriend. No, just kidding. Mm. So, and then once you choose who you're talking to, you have options on topics, right? There's a crap ton of topics, or you can just choose anything and it will choose a topic for you. So, Mark, I'm going to ask you the first question. Are you ready?
I am ready.
And studio audience, are you ready? Okay, there. Close your desk. Good Lord.
Like a thin crowd.
It's a thin crowd. Knock it off, kids. All right, here we go. Find your topic. Mark, how much hours per week do you currently exercise? Do you think that's enough? And how much time do you think you should spend? I think that's a question that should get like a, I don't know, that's like a... All exercise questions on the weekend should be null and void. I don't want to hear them.
Well, I'm not sure if I've mentioned this to you recently, but back in, I think it was the end of April or beginning of May, I finally broke down and I got one of the Fitbits. And it's the Fitbit One, I think.
Cool.
Which is this little thing that you can...
Is that the one with the five dots on it, and you know how?
No. This is the most one of the most basic models, and it fits into a little clip that you can either put on a belt or in your pocket.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yep.
So, I've been tracking this now for the last several months or so, And I probably average on most days about 30 minutes of activity. Right now, I have my daily step goal set because I actually believe, you know, set the bar low.
Right.
So you feel like you're winning.
Right.
So rather than the recommended 10,000 steps a day, because I do have an office job
right.
where I sit an awful lot, I've got it set at 5,000 steps per day. So I'm coming in anywhere between 6 and 9,000 steps.
Yeah.
A day.
It is hard when you have, and I too have an office job, but I also do IT and marketing, which gets me sort of out of my desk quite a bit at very unexpected intervals. So I can, that's about my average to 7 to 9. But when you're desk bound, that is hard. That is hard.
It is. It's really difficult. The nice thing about when I'm working from home, it's great because, I basically have a schedule where I make sure that I go for a walk around the neighborhood at 10 a.m. and then again at 2 p.m. Mm. Now, I also do this when I'm working in the office, but I work in an industrial business park in a suburb outside of Minneapolis called Eden Prairie, where there are no sidewalks. If you walk in the road, you're taking your life into your own hands because people drive like maniacs. Mm-hmm. So we work in a very large building. There are other tenants in the building. But we walk around. I usually hoodwink some of my coworkers into going with me. And we walk around the building twice, two times a day. And that actually almost comes in to the 5,000 step mark.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So we do oftentimes need to dodge semi-trailer tractors, right. But it makes it exciting, right?
Details.
Exactly.
Love it.
So do I think I get enough? You know, it's hard to say. Yeah. I feel better when I'm exercising. Mm-hmm. But I'm also kind of the type of person and the type of personality that I feel like I'm never doing enough, even though I don't even know what the recommended, aerobic activity is. And it's still like 20 minutes three times a week.
Yeah, I think I've heard 30 minutes three times a week. But
yeah. I feel like I'm getting enough. I'm sure my doctor would like me to lose weight and get more activity, but you can only do what you can do.
It's true.
All right, George, are you ready?
No. Yes.
What do you think is the best thing about being a man? What do you think is the best thing about being a woman?
Good Lord.
I don't know where this gender question. I just plugged in anything and hit.
I might need to
go.
Okay. Let's see. Best thing about being a man. Not having to deal with childbirth. That's kind of cheating. Yeah. I don't know. That's a hard question to ask a gay man, I think, because I spend less time with a woman, and so don't know, like when you're married, when you're heterosexual, and you know, men are with women a considerable amount of time, and you have insight into into what. Yeah, I don't know how to answer that actually.
Well, I think that's kind of interesting that this question kind of pops up, especially between the two of us. Being gay men, I know that I've spent some time in my, you know, late teens and early 20s thinking about what is masculine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as time has gone by, that those things that we have pointed to in the past, you know, the strong silent type, you know, 5 o'clock shadow, the flannel clothing, you know, those kinds of markers have just been really blurred, especially because I think I can just say metrosexual.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that has been something that the gay community has kind of thought about, because, you know, the stereotypes of, you know, handsome young gay men using a lot of product in their hair and wearing designer labels and being, you know, very conscious of brand, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. You know, it's, I think that that has changed over the years.
Yeah, for sure. I think for what's the best part of being a woman, I couldn't answer that, but I would have to say, if I were forced to answer it, it would be the fact that there's more sense, feeling, emotive, and I'm not saying women are emotional. I'm saying they tend to have the ability to focus and understand and understand emotions a little bit more, talk about feelings, things of that nature. Men can be pigs in that regard.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think one of the exciting things that I see happening in our culture now, and I think we still have a long way to go, but, you know, the possibility of more women in positions of power, both in politics, government, and also in corporate America, I would really like to see more of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the possibility of having a woman president is pretty spectacular. And I know there's going to be a lot of people within our culture that would go absolutely apoplectic when or if that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, our culture has a lot of very serious issues right now with both gender and race. And we are living in interesting times.
To me, it's almost as though we are nowhere near as advanced as I thought we were when these things rear their ugly heads. But I'm also trying to keep it in perspective and say that, you know, that this isn't the majority of the people in our country who have these really backward, ignorant, thoughtless sort of attitudes about women or people of color or people different than themselves. Yeah, it is a frightful time, because those people, while I think they are in the minority, they've never had a microphone like they do today. Yeah, it's weird. All right, Mark, question.
All right.
If you could choose, would you have the power to be invisible or the power to read minds?
Oh, you know, I am really, really good at, and I think a lot of gay men are really good at reading body language.
Right.
Assessing kind of the mood in the room, so to speak. So I kind of already have a little bit of that mind reading ability. Right. And I don't particularly like it from time to time. Yeah. So I'm going to pick invisibility, because I loved, back in high school when I was the high school basketball statistician, the ability to go into the boys' locker room and, you know, right. have the invisibility of, you know, they don't know.
Yeah.
Who I am or what I am, and
yeah.
the ability. It was kind of like a kid in a candy store.
Right. How interesting. And I'm just going to ask a follow-up. This is not on the app. What would be your superhero name?
let's see. Gamma Ray.
That's better than gay Rama. So
yeah, true. True.
All right.
Okay, George, are you ready?
I am not. Go ahead.
Oh, this is actually an interesting question. What do you consider cheating on your partner? Is it okay to flirt with someone else, to dance with someone else? Go.
I think if the flirtation or communication, whatever it is sincere and and repetitive, I think that's cheating. Pretty simple. You're in a grocery store and somebody makes eye contact with you and you make eye contact with them and you both sort of wink and nod and that sort of thing. Is that cheating? No. I mean, I have a number of friends who say, you know, we're married, we're not blind.
Right.
And you know, part of, like it or not, part of the gay culture is this physical animal, if you will, attraction based on physicality. And sometimes when you see that, there's, you know, I think there's no harm in, you know, especially if it's somebody, if you don't particularly find yourself attractive and you feel negative about that, but you clearly run into somebody who thinks you are, and that sort of boosts your ego a little bit. I mean, I think that's fine. But I think if it ever happens repetitively with the same person, or there's any sort of serious intent, yeah, I believe in emotional cheating. Yeah, I think.
How would you define emotional cheating?
Well, you're building a bond with somebody. In this case, it would be repetitive because it's somebody you know that knows you. You sort of unload some of your personal baggage with them, or you share issues and concerns that you have, and they're a receptive, willing, listening person, when in reality, you need to be having those conversations with your partner, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So you're getting your emotional support from someone else when, for Christ's sake, that's actually what an important building block, I think, in a relationship. Because that's what, you know, going through hard times and good times and knowing that that person is always going to be there and answer those questions or have that conversation with you. I mean, I think you're kind of pulling a Jenga block out.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Anyway. All right, cool. Next question. Let's go. All right, here, app. Bleep, bloop, blop. Who is your favorite actor or actress, and why?
Oh, wow. I have to choose just one?
Yes, and it's actor or actress. And why?
I think...
recognizing this could change 5 years from now and, you know, other people crop up.
I think the one actor that pretty much I have been following for a lot of years is Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And the reason why is he really is an amazing actor as far as acting craft is concerned. Because I mean, if you look at him in, like, Silence of the Lambs, for example, when he plays Hannibal, and there's that scene where he's in the cube with, you know, answering questions of Jodie Foster, and he has really immersed himself into this serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're talking about one of his victims, and he says, you know, I ate his liver with fava beans and a nice Chianti. Yeah. You know, you get the creep factor that just goes off the scale, and then you have a role that he plays in one of my favorite films. It's a Merchant Ivory film called Remains of the Day.
It's been a long time since I've seen that.
And he plays this butler who, you know, has experienced a lot in his life and just the way the character approaches love between he and Emma Thompson, it's just amazing to see the breadth of craft that he's capable of.
Wasn't he also in Howard's End?
I believe so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a Nixon movie? Didn't he do a Nixon movie? I haven't seen that. I feel like that's more recent, though. And I'm trying to think of something other than the Silence of the Lamb character or any of the follow-ups. But there is something that sticks in my mind that I was surprised that he didn't do. No, did he do Saving Mr. Banks?
Let's see if we can get his
who did that
filmography up here.
Which why? No, that was Tom Hanks, wasn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah. There was somebody. No, it was the movie about Alfred Hitchcock. The movie about the life of Alfred Hitchcock. What was that movie? I'm going to have to... Let me Google this while we're...
Please goggle it.
A movie about Alfred Hitchcock. And it's not that far of a movie. I mean, not that long ago. Was it just called Hitchcock? Let's see. Yep, it was. It was called Hitchcock. It was 2012. Yeah, Anthony Hopkins played Hitchcock. Yeah, I thought that he was in some role that struck me as odd. He worked it worked well. That was an odd movie. It was okay. It wasn't super, mm-hmm. but it was an interesting choice to have him in that role. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Next question.
All right. Let's.
Let me do a time check here. We have... Come on, computer. Wow, this thing is really slow. We've got about 10 more minutes. Okay, cool.
All right. What do you have in your pockets?
This will be easy. Nothing.
Are you wearing pants?
This is not podcasting with pants off podcasting. I am wearing shorts. They just happen but to be like gym shorts, and there's nothing in them because I'm going to jump into my swim trunks and go to the pool after this.
I think that's a great plan. I have my wallet.
I hate carrying a wallet in my pants.
I have this very slim profile. I basically carry my driver's license, a couple of cards, and some other things. Mm. And there's a place for cash. And that I usually keep in my front pocket.
Yeah. It's just so big and bulky, I just can't stand it. All right, Mark, do you think astrological birth signs represent one's character? If so, why?
I think human beings have fun pretending. And we, as human beings, we like to kind of categorize things. I don't put a lot of stock in astrological signs. But then again, you know, I'm a Capricorn, which is pretty realist.
So you would have that opinion because you're a Capricorn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking on this website now. You said you're a Capricorn, so you're an earth sign.
Correct.
Earth signs are grounded and are the ones that bring us down to earth. They're most conservative and realistic, but they can also be very emotional. They're connected to material reality and can be turned to material goods. That's an odd sentence. How can you turn somebody to a material good? Okay. They're practical, loyal, stable, and they stick by their people through hard times. That sounds like you.
it actually is pretty much to a T.
I'm a water sign. I'm a Scorpio. And unfortunately, I tend to believe everything I've ever seen written about Scorpios. I mean, there's no yeah buts. I mean, it's like, yes, we are fiercely loyal until you wrong us, and then we will get you back. It will be decades later, but we will have our vengeance. Let's see. So water signs are exceptionally emotional and ultra sensitive. True. They are highly intuitive, and they can be as mysterious as the ocean itself. I can see that. Water signs love profound conversations and intimacy. They rarely do anything openly and are always there to support their loved ones. I tend to believe it probably a little bit more. Am I going to go have my cards read? No. Am I going to? But I have done that at a bar once. I've had, what are those? Tarot cards. Yeah, those are fascinating.
Yeah.
Especially if you get a good reader.
All right. Oh, that's a dumb question. We're going to bypass that. Sorry.
Feel free to skip.
Here's an interesting question. Can two people be too much in love?
I mean, the answer, the what immediately came to my mind are those that are so sugary and sweet and honey and darling and, you know, not, I mean, like when they're genuinely that sweet. Well, no, honey, what do you want to do? Well, honey, it's whatever you want to do. And
schmoopy.
Yeah, too much, too much, too much. Turn that shit down about 1,000. Bring it. So I think, I hate to say too much in love, because I don't think you can ever be too much in love. I think you can be too emotive. Is that the right word?
I think it's hard because, you know, I've been doing, some reading. There's an English philosopher, by the name of Alain de Botton. And he's written a novel recently. It's called A Course in Love. And so he's writing about how we love in relationship. Mm-hmm. And he has an interesting idea that is interesting to me. He says, we should think of love as something that is a skill that we can learn. So he approaches it differently. I mean, he's basically saying that our idea of romantic love in Western society right now is one of the reasons we're in so much trouble. Mm. So it's a fascinating read, and it's kind of has some interesting thoughts in it. I haven't finished reading the book yet, but it's kind of food for thought.
Fascinating. Is it my turn?
Yes.
Has a song ever made you cry?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. One that does so regularly. And it is a classical music piece, and it's written by Arvo Pärt. And it's called Spiegel im Spiegel.
Hmm.
And it's just this amazing melody, and the structure of the song is just so beautiful to me that it you know, after the events of this week when we had the shootings in Louisiana and here in St. Paul, and then the next day, the Dallas shooting. That is one of the pieces that I turn to in some sort of emotional support.
It is pretty. Can you hear that?
Yes.
I can see why. I'm going to fade that out. I can see why that would be. I don't know that I've ever gotten emotional to classical music. And that's probably because I haven't really connected with it in that sort of spiritual way that some have. I find I listen to more of it the older I get. There are times when I need, after Miss Annie passed, I just put on classical music on TV because I needed it to be something of substance, but mm-hmm. not with words, because I didn't want lyrics to be sort of in taking advantage of that moment, you know?
Right.
But I can see why people connect with classical music. I can see that. Yeah. And plenty of songs have made me cry. We don't have that much time, man.
That's true. All right. Next question. Do you believe in karma?
Yes. Next question. No, I'm just kidding. yeah, I do. I mean, not from any sort of place that I could sort of describe its karmic forces, and I can't tell you why. I just mm-hmm. believe in the sort of everyday understanding of karma. What goes mm-hmm. around comes around. You reap what you sow. But I think part of that is not so much karma, so much as it is, you know, if you spend your life being negative and nasty, you're not going to have positive people around you. You're not going to have love and support around you. And it's kind of what sucks about what's going on right now in the world, is that we are being pulled in by both of these political parties into these ugly conversations, and we say things, and you know, usually you're connected to a party for one or more reasons, whether it's an LGBT thing, and the Democrats are generally more positive toward that, and next thing you know, you're sucked in on a gun conversation, and the reality is, there's just nothing positive about it whatsoever, and I fear sometimes that more of us, myself included, are being drug into these conversations, and we say things that we shouldn't say, and we alienate people that we shouldn't alienate. And that can't be positive. That's going to come back to bite us in the ass universally mm-hmm. in some way.
Well, I was doing some reading this morning, and I came across James Baldwin. I'm not sure if you're familiar with
mm-hmm,
him.
Mm-hmm.
But he had this quote that really struck a chord with me this morning. And I'm just going to read it. It says, "A country is only as good and as strong as the people who make it up. And the country turns into what the people want it to become." I don't believe any longer that we can afford to say that it is entirely out of our hands. We made the world we're living in, and we have to make it over.
Yeah. That's powerful stuff. James Baldwin?
James Baldwin, correct.
Mm. Yeah. Sort of self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly.
Yeah, I worry about that. I worry about that a lot. All of these violent shootings, you know, I have this opinion that, like, we need to get a grip on gun control before it becomes the wild, wild west again. And it just occurred to me in the last 48 hours, we are.
mm-hmm.
I mean, we have become that again. So, yeah.
Well, the statistic that I came across this past week is there are more guns in America than there are people.
Oh, good God.
And that is just a very sobering statistic.
Yeah. It's annoying. And I don't know what the answer is. I can opine about what I would like to see happen, but
I think the answer is that we really need to come together as a human family
mm-hmm.
rather than any sort of division beyond that, because the only way out of this is for everyone to get to that level It's not a political thing. It's not an economic thing. It's a human thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a pessimistic side to me. And I was having a conversation on social media with a friend of mine saying, we've basically, outsourced our killing to robots. And he was referring to how the suspect was dealt with in Dallas.
Yeah.
And I said to him, why does this surprise you? Our police forces have been militarized since 2004. We have drones that we use in our military. Mm-hmm. Why would this be any different?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a matter of time before a drone strike takes out one of these situations too.
Mm-hmm.
There is something troubling about that. And I'm not in any way sympathizing with the shooter that killed the police officers.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something inherently wrong with that as a method. I don't know. And I should be more well-read on the situation before I comment. I know only sort of the one layer down. Not a lot is known right now, but if it's an active shooter situation and he needs to be stopped by any means before he can kill other people, and he is not responding, those robots all have two-way communication, both camera, mm-hmm. camera and video and audio. And I can assure you he was implored to give up, surrender, put his guns down and surrender. And if he chose not to, I suppose there's really not any alternative if you want to prevent more loss of life. If there are people that are just sitting ducks and he's got aim on them,
mm-hmm.
if he doesn't have people to shoot at, and you've pinned him in, I would feel differently about that. But you're right. Our police have become militarized, but what choice do they have given the gun ownership that has soared, and not just gun ownership, but automatic weapons and stuff like that? What choice do they have?
I have a friend of mine who is a police officer, and we've been communicating this week. And he's been able to provide kind of a different perspective that we're not getting in the media. And it's it was good to hear about, because one of the questions that I asked him, especially in regards to the shooting that happened here in the city, was what is a licensed to carry person supposed to do in a traffic stop situation?
Yeah.
And so he invited me. He said, if you ever have questions on procedural cop stuff, ask me. I want to help answer this. And I think that's, you can say that you have problems with police. And the thing is that policing is based in the community and it's based on trust.
Yeah.
And there's no question that in certain communities that trust has eroded. And there needs to be...
It doesn't have to be that way, though.
Right. It doesn't.
Our mayor took to the streets. We've had three consecutive nights in Atlanta of protest. They consist largely of hundreds and thousands of people. Not hundreds of thousands. Hundreds and thousands of people. Different levels each night. Gathering downtown, and then they walk a particular street or a route. The first night, Friday night, they marched down Peachtree from downtown to Midtown, and there was a huge police presence behind them. The next night there was not, and that was worrisome. Actually, first night was Thursday night, second night was Friday night, and with the police presence, oncoming vehicles saw the lights and they knew to pull over and act accordingly until the crowd passed. But the second night there was no police presence, and I worried that without that, the protesters would would be a little more apt to do things they shouldn't do. But fortunately, we've had no violence. The first night, there were no arrests. The second night, there were about 10 arrests. And I think last night, there were more arrests. But the mayor came out and was speaking to the media in the middle of the protest. To his credit, he went right down to Peachtree and International, the sort of heart of downtown, and right in the middle of where these people were protesting. And he talked to them, and there was media around him. And you know, he said, you're in the land of Dr. King. Of course, we're going to let you have your First Amendment right to free speech. Of course, you're going to be able to do this, but we're going to insist that it be peaceful. And you're going to do it with the same love that Dr. King did it. You're not going to harm people. You should spend just as much time planning the march and how people are going to get home safely as you do what you're doing as the amount of time you spend on planning the actual protest itself. And, you know, one of the people in the crowd were hurling sort of insults and questions. And, you know, they said, well, what are you going to do about the police culture? And they were generally speaking about other places. But the mayor said, yeah, let's talk about this. The city of Atlanta's police force is representative of the city of Atlanta. And that is to say, it's a majority-minority city. And the majority of police officers are people of color here. And they're in leadership positions. The chief of police is African-American and has the last several chiefs of police have been African American, and that makes a difference. It makes a huge difference. And so you do have more of that trust. And don't get me wrong, Atlanta police have had some major screw ups themselves. There was a drug raid that went bad in the early 2000s. They wound up killing an 88 or 89 year old woman on a failed drug raid that got the wrong house, basically, and they wound up killing her. There was the famous police raid of the Eagle, the gay bar here in Atlanta, that they were suspecting drug and illicit acts, and they busted it and caught nothing, and nobody had any drugs on them, and they had 60 people laying on the floor, and they were sued, and they lost that. So Atlanta police have their own issues, like most police stations or most police departments do. But at this moment, at this time, knock on wood, this is not our issue. And so the mayor basically said these things. He said, you know what? We had 1.6 million interactions with the public. The police had 1.6 million interactions with the public last year. They fired their weapons 9 times.
That's admirable.
And so I think they're doing something right, you know, and that's what, you know, you can't have police departments that don't look like their communities. That's the number one. You got to fix that immediately, you know. And I'm not saying that, you know, a community of all white people shouldn't be able to trust a black police officer or vice versa. But if you want to feel like that police department is part of your community, it needs to look like part of your community. That's step one, you know. And then you got to do something to root out these bad apples. I mean, they exist. We've all seen police officers who have that power trip. You see it immediately when you're talking with them. If you've been pulled over by one, or you've seen one at a public event, it's immediately apparent who has the power trip. You know. And I think those people are kegs of dynamite. I mean, I think there's just waiting for the, you know, and my biggest concern, I've said this on my podcast, Georgia and Atlanta podcast, earlier today and said it on Facebook last night. My biggest concern is the amount of training these young professionals are getting. I don't think they're getting the same amount. First of all, I don't think we're paying enough police. I don't think we're paying police enough to attract the better quality officers.
Candidates, yeah.
Yeah. Two, pensions are dwindling. So there's like that was the real attraction to being a police officer was retirement, right? And having a good retirement nest egg to it was worth the risk, right? That's why you did it. And so that's going away or dwindling or gone, depending on where you are. And then the other thing that's not happening is the changeover between the old and the new is happening so quick that there's not enough older police officers who can do that peer-to-peer one-on-one training where they learn from the old guard when to act and when to shut the hell up and listen, you know, so they kind of get the sense of the street and the neighborhoods they're working and that kind of stuff. And I just think you've got to address those things super quick. The training, the peer-to-peer stuff, and then find a way to root out these folks with who are on power trips. But, you know, and speaking on the other side of the coin, when you have gun laws that are so liberal, you know, and the types of guns that folks can have, you know, they have to go into every situation assuming there's a gun at play.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
exactly.
We're over time.
We are.
We are. Folks, thanks for joining us. We were supposed to do topic suggests that we would have to hit these heavy topics, but we did anyway. It's the sign of the times.
It is.
Yeah. Mark, thanks so much.
Thank you, George. Stay safe.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The North and South of Things. More information available at northandsouthofthings.com. Follow Mark on Twitter at Laughing Buddha. That's LaughingBuddha. And George at George in Atlanta. Our podcast theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.
This show is part of the Pride 48 Network. Find more shows over at pride48.com.